Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
With Renault's award-winning hybrid and full electric lineup, where style meets tech. Rethink Renault.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, the head of Dell in Ireland will join me to look ahead to the tech trends of 2026 and tell me if the cost of our laptops is set to go up. We'll hear from the tech workers going on strike, and as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can email me right now, techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at Jess Kelly NT. I do hope you're well, and I hope you are dry. What a week of weather. I know Irish people are always mocked for talking about the weather, but oh my days. I left the house on Tuesday morning, got the Lewis into town, did the short walk from Stephen's Green Lewis stop to the office here in Newstalk Towers, and I was absolutely soaked. And I actually said to one of the girls, geez, I've never seen rain like it. Little did I know that that was only the beginning. And I just spent most of the week staring at images of places that I know so incredibly well, being fully submerged in water. And I know there was this joke of, oh, sure, it's a real storm now that it impacts Dublin. But I honestly hadn't seen anything like it. Genuinely hadn't seen anything like it. And there are friends and family of mine who had flood water coming into their homes. And there were businesses impacted. And I don't know, I heard on Lunchtime Live some of the incredible stories of people who were rescued from their homes that had been submerged as well. So yeah, I don't know. I hope you're well. And I want to give a huge shout out and a thank you to people who came out and supported those who needed help and support over the last wee while, whether that is, you know, volunteers, friends, family, the Defence Forces, the emergency services. There was a great sense of community despite the incredible damage that was done. But it got me thinking and looking at the forecasting technology and also the communication. So we might come back to that in another few weeks. But anyway, let's jump in to this week's show. Obviously enough, we are at the end of January, the first month of 2026. Headlines have been dominated by Grok, by the social media addiction trials, and indeed by AI in all forms. It is going to continue to be a huge trend of the year. I'm delighted to say that General Manager of Dell Technologies in Ireland, Mark Hopkins, is with me now to talk through how transformational AI will be this year alone and where we will see that transformation happening first. Mark, it's great to talk to you again. Before we get into the trends of 2026, just set out the stall and remind people about Dell's operation here, because I'm sure pretty much every home in the country has had a Dell product through the front door at some stage. But just remind us about the Dell operation in Ireland.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Jess. It's a pleasure to be here and appreciate the time today. We've had a presence in Ireland for over 35 years now. Main campuses are in Dublin, Limerick and Cork. And we also have an office in Belfast, which is actually situated in the New Ulster University campus as part of an industry collaboration agreement that we had with them. So long presence here. It's a really important hub, not just to support the Irish customers and partners and consumers out there, but it's a major EMEA hub. So we have our EMEA headquarters of supply chain here, our own internal cybersecurity here, lots of support, as well as the sales organizations covering different geos. So it's a pretty important hub for Dell globally, and has been here for a long time, as I said.
Yeah, and over 35 years is a significant amount of time. And obviously enough, over those 35 years, we've seen significant changes and shifts in terms of technology. We'll talk through what we're looking at for 2026. But just again, set the scene about some of the areas in which Dell is working, because people will instantly think, I'm sure, like I always just think of my Dell Inspiron 6000 laptop that I had in college, or my XPS when I had a bit of money. People will think just laptops, but there's much more to it than that.
Oh, there is. And I think that's, there's still some level of perception out there, especially from a consumer brand point of view. But ultimately, that business has expanded massively over the 42, 43 years that Dell has been in operation since Michael Dell started the company in his dorm room in the University of Texas. So ultimately, the vast majority of our business spans from that client business, which is still very important to us, right through to edge, multi-cloud infrastructure, cyber recovery, and clearly a very much growing AI business, which is, despite all the industry hype, is certainly we're seeing a massive growth in that part of our business. So really, those are the key areas from edge to cloud to multi-cloud, as well as the client portfolio that everybody would kind of associate Dell with, I guess.
You mentioned AI, and listeners to this show will know it's almost like a bingo card now. Every week we'll talk about AI being slapped on some service that never had it before, or some companies coming up with an innovative use of it. Can you just explain the role that Dell is having in terms of AI, the application, the delivery for customers, both business and then consumer? And then we'll talk about how you guys are using it then as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's hard to believe. It's really only 2.5 years since really the kind of generative AI burst onto the scene, I guess, is the best way to put it. But that's not new to us. So from a corporate point of view, we've been doing, the traditional, if you want to call it high performance compute, traditional AI before the generative AI hype started that 2.5 years ago. And in most businesses globally, including here in Ireland, we would have had a high performance compute on a traditional AI business that was pretty quiet and behind the scenes. So it would have been supporting the likes of research organizations, our universities on both sides of the border on the island, who would have been heavy users from a research and that high performance compute to do that research work, as well as the commercial organizations behind it. So from that point of view, and traditionally just give share a few numbers that are common knowledge. Typically, in any given year prior to that, the birth of generative AI 2.5 years ago, we would have globally had a business that was in and around the region of, in any given quarter, of about $200 to $250 million of that type of business that we were doing, products or solutions that had been sold but not delivered yet. And at the last officially public results, that back order of everything AI related in the AI factories that we're now shipping has grown from that $200-$250 million to a $13 billion order of backlog of magnitude. So it gives you an idea of kind of what's happening out there. And really, that's where Dell has really focused on this and bitten down really hard in the last 2.5 years in terms of focusing on that market, both from a client perspective, but also from the infrastructure that supports that. And ultimately, our objective is trying to make it easier for our customers, enterprise customers and our consumers, to consume a service by bringing the best of the industry together and building AI factories, so that customers have to think less about building that infrastructure and focus more on how they get business benefits from it. So that's really where we've come to in that last 2.5 years.
So, stupid question, what does that actually look like or entail? And can you give me some practical examples of it?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So, I mean, ultimately, an AI factory in our languages is about bringing those components apart, whether it's whether it's the networking, the server, the storage, the compute, and also the third parties in there. So the large language models, the services components, to put that together and allow our customers the ability to be able to pick and choose, rather than getting tied into one specific set of technologies, whether that be the chipsets from NVIDIA, Intel, and AMD, whether that be the large language models from the various providers, but putting that together in one package, which we call the AI factory, and allowing our customers to be able to consume that in a much easier way, and also giving the integration to either deploy those types of solutions either at the edge in their own data centers or into the cloud, depending on what the use case is that they're doing. So ultimately, our objective is to make it easier to deploy and get to that business value much more quickly than if you were trying to put those components together yourself, which is obviously more challenging.
And for such an emerging space, would all your customers know what they would require or what they'd like to have in this space, because it is still all very new and we're trying to figure out how to balance the technology with regulation and legislation and all the responsibilities that come with it, as well as the business objectives as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. The answer is definitely not, but there are definitely different camps of customers out there. So I think we've certainly seen two distinct markets evolve over that 2.5 year period. So you've got the likes of the hyperscaler infrastructure, those neo cloud providers, and a lot of new companies that have emerged with significant funding and finance behind them who are setting themselves up as AI as a service type model. And they absolutely know, and maybe not completely at the beginning, but they have huge levels of experience and have invested in the expertise. So they know what they're building. And Ireland, we sit in a cluster of countries, including the Nordic countries from Northern Europe. And there's been a large scale investment because of the expansive data center and cheap power that you can get in the Nordic countries. So we've seen a massive cluster of those types of customers who absolutely have a high level of experience, and that has grown very quickly over that 2.5 year period. Who then individual enterprise customers who maybe have an idea in their head as to what the type of use case, what the business process is they're trying to automate or apply AI for, but will start very much with a conversation before you ever get near the technology about what is the use case that we're thinking about here. And we went through the same journey ourselves in Dell when we started to deploy this technology for our internal use. And that has been a real learning for both ourselves internally as we've deployed it for our own use, but also seeing those journeys that our customers are on, which has been really varied.
And just that's such an interesting, and I think it's an important point as well, that there's no point in going out and spending bucket tons of money on technology because it's new if it's not going to suit your exact purpose. So how important is it that businesses do a bit of an audit? Because I'm sure there are businesses listening to this now, maybe they're SMEs rather than, you know, the larger scale, but they're thinking of either upgrading their technologies or investing in new technologies. Is that audit phase really important to make sure that they're not just spending money for the sake of it?
Yeah, and I would say even before you get to the audit phase, Jess, that there's a stage before this. This is where some of the press loves the big numbers when you hear about the investments that the hyperscalers and some of those neo cloud providers have spent on this. I actually think that does a disservice, especially to that SME base that you referenced, because I think it creates a level of fear that you have to spend huge volumes of money on this stuff to get a return from it. And that's just simply not the case. As for smaller scale AI deployments, either on premise or in the cloud, or these language models, as the lower level server technology and the client base that you asked me about at the beginning, where you can run these models on PCs now to start there, it absolutely does not need a huge level investment. What it does need is a concept of what the business problem is that you're trying to solve, and then work from there rather than starting with the technology. And that's really what we've seen, especially in the last, I would say, 6 to 9 months. At the level of maturity of that conversation and the realization as people move out of that pilot phase. There's still lots of people in it, don't get me wrong, and I'm trialing this, but we now are definitely starting to see in that enterprise base customers move out of that and start to deploy at a bigger scale. But you don't have to start big is definitely the message.
And in terms of the future proofing of the physical technology, our devices today, in terms of lifespan, like we know, you know, a cup of coffee could go over a laptop and it could go bye-bye straight away. But in terms of longevity and future-proofing, is that something that we're even able to factor into the conversation at the minute? Because we just don't know where we're going to be in 2 years, never mind five.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good question. So yes, in terms of the refresh of this technology, no matter where you're using it or where you're deploying it, it is something you need to think about. But the technology is moving on quickly. But if the technology underpins the use case and the business case that you have today, and you're getting a return on that, if that evolves over that, and we're seeing that even with our own internal use cases, that they've evolved so quickly. That if you've had a return on the investment that you've made, then you move on to the next phase. And if you need to refresh or avail of the ever expanding capability that's out there, then you can. But you have to revert back to the business case and make sure that this stacks up and you're getting a return for that.
The other point that I often make if I'm speaking at events and all the rest is, yes, it's exciting to have new platforms to try and to play with and to test and see what works. But at the very core of every single thing you do, with new software or old software or anything in between has to be security, cybersecurity, and the integrity of the platforms that you're utilizing. Do you think that, you know, we're whatever amount of years on now from the ransomware attack on the HSE, do you think that the importance of cybersecurity and integrity of systems and resilience of systems, has that message fully landed with businesses here in Ireland?
I think there's probably two answers to that question. I think the overall operational resilience, and you mentioned the HSE, but there's been lots of other examples, both locally and internationally, which have definitely, you know, over that period of time, I think it was May 21 when the HSE was hit, that have learned. And I think, you know, organizations like that being open about the experience and how they went through that has been a huge learning. And I think the HSE deserve a huge amount of credit for how open they've been in terms of helping not only their public sector colleagues, but also the broader customer set and commercial customers in Ireland, and helping with that. So I think the message is definitely there from a general operational resilience state. And that's a big part of our business in terms of how you recover from an incident like that, and has been growing. I think what is maybe newer in the last 9 to 12 months is as customers have started to deploy those newer AI workloads, is how do they build that into their operation resiliency plans? And not everybody has clearly deployed, and unfortunately there continue to be customers who'd be affected by this and can't recover as quickly as they would like. So I think there's almost like two journeys within that. There's the traditional IT infrastructure, no matter where you have that organizations are trying to make sure they have that operational resiliency coverage for. And then as they start to consider and deploy new AI workloads, how do they build that into their operational resilience plans? And that is definitely a growing question. And we would host a number of CIO sessions around this, and the CIO colleagues have been very vocal about needing to spend more time on that as they deploy AI in anger and at greater scale.
Yeah, I do think it's an area that is incredibly important. And another area as well, we recently had Bobby Healy, who most people will know from Man of Drones, on the show, but he was talking about a product he developed in 18 days using AI. It's called Nevernote. And the conversation kind of led us down the path of tech skills. And it's not that, you know, we'll be doing people out of jobs, but just the types of work that we're doing is going to change. And I guess that brings us on to looking ahead to 2026. So I've no doubt that we will see more companies and innovations like what Bobby did, you know, turning things around using AI to write the code and all the rest. But as you look ahead to the 12 months that are before us now, are there particular areas that you're watching with great interest to see how, where, when, and why AI infiltrates different aspects of business and indeed day-to-day life?
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's subtle things that have already happened, as well as future that I think that we'll see expand in 2026. And certainly, I would never have described myself as leading edge technically in terms of my own personal adoption, but I've been really, as Dell have pushed forward with this for the internal tool sets that we've used, you know, I find it creeping, not creeping into my work life, but also into my personal life as well, in terms of how you kind of just end up using some of these tools without really, and it is a bit daunting at the beginning. So from a personal point of view, when we introduced our first sales tools, the first one that we did internally was around automated forecasting. And from our business point of view, our supply chain is hugely important. So the sales organizations globally forecasting what it is that we're likely to sell in any given country in any fiscal period, being able to forecast that for our supply chain so that we can deliver as quickly as we have done traditionally, and our supply chain is a huge area of strength to us. We automated a lot of and used those AI tool sets in terms of how we would do that. So taking historical data, taking analyst data about what they saw happening in the market, taking our past performance and feeding that into an AI tool. And the first quarter that we did it, we used both a human call in terms of what we were calling for the Irish number for a given quarter, and we used the AI tool in parallel. And then in Q2, we just stopped using the manual intervention because it was so accurate. And that allowed us, you know, as we talk internally, less time reading the news, more time making the news. That's out, you know, allowing you to spend more time out with customers. And then we've deployed a whole raft of other tools in there that has, and the line I like around this is kind of AI, certainly for us, has changed what's inside your job rather than changing whether you actually have a job. But but I also think, so for us, it's had huge benefits, but I also see certain segments to the original question that you asked. We're certainly in media, there's a great, in video production and media, there's a great example on the island with Studio Ulster, who've just deployed one of the most, the world's leading virtual reality and augmented reality production facilities on the shores of Belfast Lough. And we've been heavily involved in that project, underpinning the technology that underpins it, and their ability now and what they can do with the technology all inside now, making whether it's video game production, whether it's movie productions, TV sets. It is incredible what they have built and the foresight that they had to deploy that. So certainly, and that area of media, gaming, virtual reality, augmented production was something we saw really start to take off about 2.5-3 years ago, and great to see a local example of that. We're also seeing a lot of it in the kind of financial trading, quant trading point of view. Obviously, you know, without getting into any of the politics, there's a fair amount of uncertainty and turmoil in the markets at the moment. And there are companies who have definitely used those tool sets to be able to analyze and use and point AI tool sets, and the ingestion of data and the demands that they're putting on the infrastructure that underpins that is really interesting. And we're plugging some of our engineering teams into those customers because they're really stretching what this technology will do at that level. And then on the public services point of view, again, with local examples, we're seeing some really interesting case studies with one of our health organizations, public health organizations here, who already had all the data there from digital imaging, digital x-ray, and wanted to reduce the missed fractures in their A&E departments, and by pointing an AI tool on data sets that they already had. And that bit's really important. So they had their data in a structure and organized in a way that allowed them to then just plug in the AI tool sets and allow them to look for those missed fractures. And they managed to cut that rate from just over 7% to just under 1%. So definitely seeing specific examples in specific industries. And I think that's only going to increase as 2026 continues.
Yeah, and I think, you know, AI in healthcare and in pharmaceuticals, I think it's a fascinating area to watch. I was in Boston last year and met with some of the researchers in MIT, and they were saying that the potential for AI to speed up the drug discovery process to then go on for FDA approval and all the rest is phenomenal. And I do think, having spoken to various experts within our own healthcare service, again, the correct, the safe, the accurate application of AI could be transformational for our health service. So it is a really interesting space to watch.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just to come back to that point, because I think that's really important for Ireland, because if you look at the, you know, the importance of both the pharma research industry and the tech sector that exists in Ireland, we've had these discussions facilitated by our friends in the American Chamber of Commerce around how we can use that. And again, given some of the uncertainty that prevails in those markets at the minute, as well as how Ireland can take a leading opportunity, both in that research, but also the tech that underpins that, to become, you know, an even further leader in this industry. Because I think we're the third biggest exporter of healthcare products in the world. So obviously there's a huge amount of skill experience plus in that sector, plus the technology sector that underpins it. So that's an area I am convinced we could get more from and for Ireland to take a lead on the global stage.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think it's definitely an area to watch with great interest. You alluded to uncertainty a few times there, and I guess it's part of the conversation that we have to have, because every individual, every business, every industry, I think, is watching with great interest what's happening on the global stage. And that sense of uncertainty is definitely palpable from the conversations that I've been having with business leaders. From Dell's point of view, given the sort of global footprint that you have, given the importance of, you know, parts, minerals and all the rest, what's the sense of how things lay in terms of that geopolitical tension at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a politician. I'm not going to get into the conversation around that. I think the supply chain piece of this is really interesting. So, you know, whether it be the challenges that we had during COVID, whether it be political uncertainty, you know, we've dealt with this over the 40 plus years of the company. Just some of the reasons behind it have changed over that period of time. So yes, there is uncertainty at the moment, but I would say from our industry point of view, we've coped with that pretty well. I think that the tech industry, from a supply chain point of view, has coped well. I think what we're seeing at the minute is more a supply chain constraint, but again, because of some of that, those big numbers and the massive investment that we have seen at the higher end of the market is providing some interesting challenges on supply chain, as some of our component suppliers have pointed some of their manufacturing capacity towards that AI infrastructure, and that is definitely creating some challenges around the likes of memory and disk shortages. At the moment, now we're pretty well placed, and what I would say is we're happy that for 2026 we can underpin supply, but there's definitely a cost impact that we're seeing. We're seeing that probably play out more than the political instability, and it's obviously for us, it's one that we have much more direct control over, and allow us to focus on what we're good at and making sure we continue to be able to supply, and we're confident in our position that for 2026. But those supply constraints, as I'm sure you've read about, are here for 2026 and probably into 2027, just given what we've seen in the industry over the last 18, 24 months. It's creating that supply constraint.
And so, like, every September we do the back to school, back to college guide on the Pat Kenny Show, and we talk about laptops, and people will often, for the household laptops or PCs, use it as a time to upgrade their devices. But one thing I've noticed in the last number of months, since probably last September, is an increase in people emailing me going, like, should I buy now or wait? And if I wait, will the prices go through the roof? Because the consumers just don't know necessarily what's going to happen. None of us do, obviously. But in terms of the not necessarily price controls, but the maintaining of prices kind of at that sort of consistent level, depending on the spec and all the rest, is that something that you are conscious of?
Yeah, definitely. And it's not just for consumers. I think it's for all our customers out there at the moment, that that the supply constraints I've talked about are having a challenge at the moment in terms of maintaining that cost. And that's something we're absolutely seeing. If you read any of the analyst reports, some of the increases that we've already seen over the 6 months and that are due to continue into 2026, I think the answer is understand what you need now, and certainly those prices only seem to be going one way. So certainly the advice would be is, if you need something now, I would advise against waiting, because the prices seem to be still on the upward trajectory. If you look at any of the analyst reports, that seems to be common across the industry, whether you're buying as a consumer or as a business, So fixing what you need now and making sure, and if the lead times start to get a little longer as well in some of these things as well, is just build that into your plans for the year. So I would say come and talk to us as early as you can around what it is that you need. And that's the advice is the same, whether it's to consumers or to business leaders.
My final question is, Dell, obviously, as we've spoken about in Ireland over 35 years, such a broad spectrum of job titles and roles and work being done at the company. For somebody who's contemplating wanting to work in technology, and they're maybe filling out their CAO form or looking at their CAO form, is there one particular area or one set of skills that you think would be of value and stand the test of whatever it is the next 3 or 4 years hold for us?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. From a personal point of view, my daughter, my eldest, has just gone through this. She's just graduated, and even after graduation, she's got into a program with one of the UK banks that she starts in August. And it was really interesting to watch how she was using some of the new tool sets on a broader ability to learn. And I think that's the key point here, is that the technology is changing so quickly, as I think the ability to pick up new learnings, no matter what the field, is more important than the subject itself. And the ability to change and to learn, and some of the tool sets that are available now, it's incredible how quickly you can maybe not become an expert, but become pretty efficient on a subject that you knew maybe not an awful lot before. And I'll give you a personal example of that. As we look to some of the issues, as I mentioned earlier, with power consumption and the data center debate that's been going on, as I've done my research about that, that's an area in terms of consumption of power and what data centers are doing is something I knew a little bit about. But again, using the tool sets to be able to do that research, you can learn quickly. So I think for anybody, it's more the ability to learn on the job and change direction when you need to. And that there's a world of opportunity for that out there as well, if you're open to it. So I think that the ability you know, for the next generation that are coming through. I did a general business and IT degree, and it's almost as relevant. That's unfortunately, I'm afraid to say, it's 30 plus years ago now at this stage. But the ideals behind that, trying to bridge that gap between business and technology, are still as relevant today. But the specific subjects underneath it will have changed beyond all recognition. So I think it's more the ability to pick up, be open-minded to what you want to do, and be able to change direction if an opportunity arises or the world continues to change around us.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's that notion of the lifelong learning. I have a degree in Irish and geography and I still get lost walking up and down Grafton Street. But it is that thing of getting a degree under your belt and then just jumping on opportunities. And as I said, lifelong learning, that seems to be the way of the world at the moment because it is so fast paced. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks so much, Jess. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, that was Mark Hopkins, General Manager of Dell Technologies Ireland. As always, I'd love to hear from you, techtalk@newstalk.com. Are you apprehensive about the cost of tech going up over the next wee while? It's pretty stark to hear that sort of messaging. You know, if you need something or if you think you're going to need something, get it now. Because we just genuinely don't know what's going to happen in the world over the next little while. It's very unnerving. Techtalk@newstalk.com, though, is the email address. Right, when we come back here on News Talk, we'll hear from tech workers at an outsourcing firm who are members of the Communications Workers Union, and they are taking strike action in a dispute over redundancy pay and union recognition.